Hey folks, welcome to the Lifetime Body Podcast. I'm your host, John Zombro, and this is episode number 60. It's another one of our PT basics or physical therapy basics show, and today's title is To Stretch or Not to Stretch. What do you think of that, PK?
I'm waiting to learn more. Good morning.
Always a good morning when I'm hanging with you, bro.
Yeah, and hanging in person. Here we are again.
Yep, just doing a little conferencing and sipping some delicious brew.
Absolutely. Now, brew being coffee. Not that just because it's the morning doesn't mean that we couldn't have actual brews, but cold brews will have to wait. So tell me about to stretch or not to stretch. What's the premise of today's episode?
Yes, as you can imagine, this is a very common and often controversial topic, to stretch or not to stretch. Stretching is a tool in our therapeutic or training toolbox, but it's not a panacea for everyone. Many people have success with stretching almost at what I would call near religious levels, and they become extreme zealots in its promotion. Today, we're going to try to answer the question of to stretch or not to stretch by considering the who, why, how, and when.
Fantastic.
Like Captain Fantastic. Oh, man, this is often the time when a song comes in. And the only thing that's stuck in my mind right now is, darn it, won't you take me to Funky Town? That's all I got.
It's all good. It's all good.
So I'm not sure if stretching is Funky Town, although I have seen some people doing some funky stretches. As we get into this, I'd like to preface the topic with some words of advice, and they're based on wisdom, my wisdom, and many other coaches, trainers, therapists' wisdom, and it's for our audience. We've got to remember that exercise is merely a tool which we employ for our health, fitness, and performance, and we've got to avoid this practice of exercise as religion. So no matter how seemingly difficult that may appear, try to stay unbiased, be open-minded and objective when designing your program. Always do what gets results specific to your body and your goals. And when things aren't working, change them up.
Interesting. So what prompted this preface today about exercise as religion as a potential red flag or issue or something to watch out for? Have you been seeing more of that?
I'd say it's been a perpetual tongue-biting issue.
You have been perpetually biting your tongue when encountering individuals or groups of people that are using exercise as religion?
Yes, that's what I'm saying, but it's hard to speak with that bitten tongue. Okay, so specifically, I find myself in situations, circumstances, social engagement, workout. You know, and one person will say, oh, you know, my such and such either hurts or doesn't seem to be working right, or I need to enhance my performance. And then someone else very kindly and well-meaning offers up, hey, well, you know, you should stretch. You should do this stretch. You should do it all the time. It worked for me. And then that's when I sometimes hesitate to say exactly that last part of the statement. It worked for you, but it doesn't mean it's going to work for the next person, because how we apply any tool would be based on needs and what's appropriate for the use of that tool. And I see that a ton with stretching. I've heard people say things that, oh gosh, you know, if you just stretch your hamstrings, you know, your performance will be better, your injury risk will go down, your marital harmony will increase. None of those things have been definitively proven in the literature.
It's interesting. So I think that specifically with stretching and addressing an issue or a tightness or maybe an injury, applying exercise as religion, especially to someone else's circumstance, that's a huge red flag. If someone to come to you and say, listen, you know, you got tight hammies, I don't know how to deal with that, but, you know, stretching for me is almost like it's how I get centered. It's like meditation. You would have a different reaction to that.
Sure. And I think that's where we're going with this discussion. So we were talking about, I believe the order is who, why, how, and when. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of the first discussion point would be who should make a concerted effort to incorporate stretching into their daily their daily whatevers, their practices, their workouts, routines, and also, for whom might that be a contradiction or contraindication, excuse me.
Gotcha. Okay. So who?
Well, okay. This is, I'm not trying to be snarky here, but anyone who needs or wants to improve mobility, to get proper functional status or improved sports performance. And so if a person has a deficit in mobility, and we talked about that previously mm-hmm. on the show, we got to get them closer to the mean so they can perform better in terms of, you know, execution and output and also health in their body. Well, the mobility deficient individual will benefit from stretching and other means which improve their mobility.
Gotcha. So then there's got to be a flip side of that coin. If someone's limited in mobility, then that's the right individual to consider stretching. Who's the wrong individual?
Anyone who has an acute injury, contusion, laceration, a tear, things like that, which is still in what we would call the acute injury or bleeding phase. So we've talked about that before.
Sure.
Three phases of injury, bleeding, scab, and scar. So an acute injury, a lot of times a person will say, oh gosh, this really hurts badly. Should I stretch it? And I'm like, well, in most cases, no. You have to temporarily allow the body to heal a bit and recover from the insult of that injury before we can start to inject these rehabilitative modes.
Right. And what's popping into my mind is lower back. You pull your back, feels tight. You're technically, maybe you don't even realize it in the bleeding phase, and what you feel like your body needs is to stretch it out. But actually, that's, you're telling us exactly what the body doesn't need. It needs to heal before the appearance of tightness could be this bleeding phase then.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes the messages, our rational mind versus our instincts, mm-hmm. things get a little bit misinterpreted, and that's just human. We're all, of the human beast. So that can happen. The other area where I think we have to be extremely careful about, and I see it very commonly, is with what we would call very hypermobile individuals. So as we talked about before, mobility and stability exist on a continuum. And if a person is hypermobile, they're way out there on that continuum towards instability. And therefore, mm-hmm. If you like statistics, let's say they're greater than 2 standard deviations from the mean on that mobility-stability relationship. So that can be either globally in their body or just in one area. Well, these individuals need to be very cautious with their stretching because you can get hurt. In fact, in a person like that, make sure we're being specific here, stretching and various forms of it can be a silent killer.
Really?
Believe it or not, an orthopedic wrecker. Because what happens is, If you do lots of stretching and you're already a very mobile individual, you can end up making your connective tissues unstable and you significantly magnify your risk of joint injury. So, and this is well documented. It's not like we're making things up here on the Lifetime Body Podcast where science meets common sense, but we are giving it to you straight, folks. And so think about it. If you, and this is going to date me a bit, but if you're more like Gumby than Pokey, watch out. Don't stretch too much.
Wow. Okay. I think I just barely caught that. So interesting. All right. So this really, the who is a major component of where you start to answer the question to stretch or not to stretch.
Yeah. And it's like, it's like, who are you? I really want to know. And you really want to know who you are in terms of should you stretch or not. Absolutely. And so here's another thing to add on that. And this is, really, there's a general dichotomy or difference in thinking between the athletic world and the fitness world. Most of your well-trained, experienced, high-level coaches and trainers recognize, brace for it, the limited value of stretching for sports performance. And it typically, and you look at better high school and certainly most collegiate professional programs, stretching is applied more intelligently. Sure, it's done, but it's not done a lot, and it's only done where it's indicated. Now, in the fitness world, it's just become general principle almost. Most people think that you just can't stretch too much. You can't get too much of it. More is always better. And I like to say, let's not lose our common sense here. We can, as humans, be or do too much of anything. And that applies to exercise, food, political orientation, and otherwise. So there's that common sense thing. But in fact, if any athlete at any level wants to be faster, more explosive, being able to reach, throw, jump, so it's not just talking about runners or sprinters, they actually should stretch in a very limited capacity. And that may seem shocking to many people. But what happens, and again, and I alluded to that earlier, is overstretching can weaken their musculotendinous stiffness. So that complex of how the muscle and the tendon and the fascia move the body, if we stretch that out and get it kind of sloppy, floppy, and noodly, we've suddenly altered the myokinetic chain or the movement chains in our body that allow us to produce force and manage it. So we end up reducing performance and increasing injury risk if we overstretch.
Interesting. So we're starting with who, and now kind of based on that sort of dichotomy there, if you have a performance goal, even if it's primarily for fitness, why you are stretching or not is the big, I guess that's the next hurdle to cross, because what you're saying is that actually, it can be counterproductive to your goal. So I guess my question to you is, why? What are the reasons someone may consider doing some more stretching that may be even counter to what we think we know about stretching?
Mm-hmm. I'll try to keep this one simple. If an individual has a mobility restriction, so in other words, for their body, they need to be able to move through a certain range of motion without limitation, mm-hmm. Stretching is a great tool. And so we would use stretching, and it could be someone who's globally restricted. We see that, the tight individual who's not close enough to the mean and is overly stable, you do have that. Mm-hmm. They're actually more rare in the population than people who are too mobile. Mm-hmm. So that's your tool. Now, also, if you said, well, what about on a transient level, if your exercise, whatever you're doing, it could be exercise or other lifestyle practices, results in tightened or stiffened muscles that impair your either total movement range or even quality of that movement. Sure, that's a great place to apply stretching. And we, again, use it as a strategic tool. And maybe the last thing, kind of overlaying all this is, to some extent, if you enjoy it, if you enjoy stretching or any variation that of exercise, forms of exercise that use stretching, do what you love. If you find it relaxing or helpful, and it doesn't impair your performance or aggravate injury, so as long as it's not hurting you and you love it, go ahead and do it. I mean, that's really where I think we look at a lot of these things.
Interesting. I want to go back to the first point there. So if you have a mobility restriction, this is your tool. Let's do a for example there.
Oh, certainly. We talked about hamstrings, just mentioned them in the conversation previously. So let's say we use that. And if you think of a certain amount of, range of motion or mobility, flexibility, elasticity, slightly different things, but they all seem a bit synonymous. And we've got these hamstrings, and a person is trying to run, but the hamstrings have shortened to a point where this individual cannot attain the ideal stride length. So in other words, the hamstring is so short, it won't allow, I'm not talking about overstriding, but it won't allow for optimal striding. Hmm. But in that case, absolutely, we want to improve the mobility in the system to reach optimal, and anything that's suboptimal, has those risks of not just poor performance, but tissue damage.
Gotcha. All right. Well, let's keep it going. Let's shift into third gear. We've identified, we know who we are. We know why we're doing it. How should we go about our stretching?
Yeah. So, the sky is the limit, I guess. And so first of all, as a part of a workout, most people say, oh gosh, I'm going to put my stretching into my workout, and there's some applications for before versus after we'll get into here. But also throughout the day, you know, a person who's got, you know, mobility restrictions benefits heavily from frequent stretching throughout the day. So those individuals will benefit significantly from sending a message to their collagen fibers on a frequent basis throughout the day, unless they get more more mobile. Another thing to think about with stretching is it can be part of a progressive warm-up. And so, you know, when we're warming up for a sport or activity, we want to definitely go through levels of, you know, coming from rest to getting fully, you know, capable of the output that our goal requires. And stretching has a place in that. There is some controversy to say, well, should you do much stretching in the warm-up versus saving that for post-exercise or cool down? And it is true, I think, that the greater part of a warm-up should be progressive activities that emphasize dynamic movement and activation of the central nervous system and cueing and lubricating tissues. That's very true. But you can still do a small amount of stretching in a warm-up. Now, the opposite side of that is there's fairly definitive data that suggests if you do a significant amount of static stretching with prolonged holds in your warm-up, that can be deleterious to your performance. What that does is it decreases for several hours the contractile force capabilities of skeletal muscles. So, you know, we want to be judicious. If you do a few stretches, hold them for a few seconds, that's not really a bad part of a warm-up. It's actually, it can be valuable. But if you kind of go into, if you're about to do anything that involves jumping, lifting, running, and you go into, I'm not here to bash yoga, but if you wouldn't use a kind of like a yoga routine in your warm-up.
This is interesting, and it sounds counter to maybe what I feel like is common sense or commonly accepted. It's, if you're going to do something dynamic like that, you got to get warmed up and stretched out for it to be safe, as opposed to you know, going into it trying to jump and then blowing out a hammy. I think that maybe it's just some of the terminology or some of the knowledge, but this seems, when you have this conversation with your clients, do they say, wow, this seems different than what I think I know, or I think I've learned in the past?
It kind of does until we break it down.
Sure.
You know, and so to try to make that make sense, sure, we want a body that's warm, and obviously increasing tissue temperature improves, you know, extensibility of collagen fibers automatically. So the body, you know, has a little bit less resistance to movement. But warm up also, and even the concept of feeling loose, can involve, how do I want to say this, being revved up, really. And so you're activating your central nervous system, how it recruits muscles and knows where to put the body in space and move it. So you're sort of greasing that groove. And a lot of that, when we look at stretching, is related to what's called the stretch reflex. So there's a stretch reflex in muscle, which is protective. And so if you apply a stretch to a muscle, it will contract against it to protect itself from tearing for a few seconds, and then it will relax. And so an interesting thing, how do you want to use that stretch reflex? So a lot of times I'll have people do super brief but gentle stretches, just a few seconds, and what that does is it spring loads their muscles. So we're not actually trying to, you know, make them increase resting muscle length, which is a term that you get from stretching. We're actually lighting up their central nervous system, and then it starts cueing and sparking the ability to properly recruit those muscles. So that's wonderful. Another thing you can do is if you do a short hold, you know, let's say it's 10 to 15 seconds on that stretch, that doesn't have as much of that potential muscle weakening property as, say, like a 30-second to 2-minute hold per the research would do. So there's a way to strategically use stretching in your warm-up, but if we make it a small part of a bigger warm-up, that's better. And then also, you know, if you look at the post-workout. Some people use the term warm down, others use cool down, you know, whatever it is, the thing you use to get from the high output state back closer to rest. And that's a great time to perform, you know, some of those static stretches with longer holds, should you want to. And I think
that most folks benefit from understanding the concept of triplanar motion in the body and also the value of either avoiding or limiting exposure to end range positions in all three planes.
Triplanar, and you just use a part of your body and you say, you know, you can, in a forward backward plane, you bend it. In a sideways plane, you side bend it. In a rotational plane, you twist it. So if you go as far as you can in all three of those positions, bend, forward bend, side bend, and twist, what you've done is you've taken all the slack out of your connective tissue. You're at end range. So now, you know, the stretching force is loading those joint tissues more. And also any tiny twist or load put into the system, you know, there's a high risk that that's going to cause a rupture or tissue failure. So that's, you know, with stretching, we've got to be careful that we don't hurt ourselves doing it. So not only can kind of like just holding a stretch for a long time make you lax, if you're in an end range position, you've got to be very careful getting into and out of it. In fact, I don't recommend that for too many people.
Really interesting. I think that I'm just going through my very, you know, limited experience, I guess, of knowledge. And I think I just, I'm just learning some things here, letting that wash over me. Brings up the question, when, all right, taking everything into account, you know, who we are, why we're doing it, how we might go about doing it, when is the obvious next step? Can I get the most from stretching if it's going to benefit me based on my goals?
Sure. And so let's say we have a person who has a high need to perform some stretching. You know, the obvious answer is, well, whenever you can fit it in, you know, so needs dictate priority. And if a person is, you know, quite restricted, might say, gosh, you know, every time you, you know, get up to go get a drink of water, go to the restroom, perform a stretch. And there's a way to do that if you're not super, you know, warmed up, you know, do that gently, fine. And that gets into what I wanted to talk about. It segued nicely is a cold body, in other words, a not warmed up body, can be stretched. But we probably should be doing it a bit more gently with less vigor than a warmed up body. This is here's where things get really fancy. And this is where, you know, physical therapists and other, you know, movement professionals can work with folks. Because if you're stretching a really warmed up body, more of the effects are probably going to go into the muscle. And so the muscle, the muscle spindle is resetting its normal resting length with prolonged stretching on a warm body. That might be a goal. It might be valuable to do that at times. But if we have restricted tissue, particularly with scar tissue or at the interface where the tendon and the muscle meet, that's called the musculotendinous junction. It's, you know, it's tougher, more fibrous tissue. We actually may be better off if we're trying to make change in that tissue to stretch it cold. And again, this has to be done artfully by, you know, a person or with a clinician's help, because you actually, you want to tear it at that point. That's a shocking thing, but you know, you're causing very controlled micro tearing. And so in other words, if you heat the body up and you sort of dance around the restricted area, the muscles get looser, but that problem spot's not being addressed. It gets a tiny bit more elastic when it's warm, but it's still not really getting corrected. That's not as effective as applying a controlled smart force that localizes on that, say, scar or tendon issue, and just a tiny bit micro tears. Anytime we have tearing, we have inflammation. So we want to control that process. But there, again, there's an art form. And so it's just kind of that, you know, thought like, well, what do I do in my exercise? Or what does a clinician do when they apply a technique to a person, a manipulation or other things? That's really, you know, the part of what we're going through is like, well, what's the target tissue? What's its limitation? And how, what tool can get that result best? And obviously you want to test whatever you do. You look at, well, what was the outcome? Did we affect and improve that motion and or movement capacity? And I would say this, though, and you alluded to it earlier as well, really where we want to be exceedingly careful in performing stretches, particularly those end range three plane stretches, is with the back in the morning.
Got it.
And the reason is you're dealing with multiple tissues, not just muscles, and particularly the spinal segments. So those discs and even the vertebral bodies swell at night. Essentially, they absorb, or what the term we use is imbibe water. So they swell up, and you gain a little height every night when you sleep. You probably notice that when you get in your vehicle and look at your rearview mirror in the morning versus the evening. Anyway, long story short is, we all wake up with a slightly colder, stiffer, less lubricated back. And over a few hours of the day, that starts to, those liquids, fluids start to equilibrate, and things start to get really more amenable to activity. But the first thing in the morning, that's why a lot of injuries happen when a person puts on their socks, ties their shoes, bends over to pick up a pen or a paper clip. I've seen it thousands of times.
Got it. That's very interesting. There's something in my nascent understanding of this that is reconciling getting warming up the body versus stretching, especially in relation to movement, exercise, fitness, that I think those two things are confused a lot.
Yes, they are. And in fact, as we look at this mechanically, we're talking about mobility, stability. You know, we want to have the right amount of looseness, shall we say, balanced with the tightness or the stability. But that warming up thing, you know, there's a real benefit if you're going to do exercise to have your temperature escalate. So, you know, going through, any form of warm-up procedure, a hot shower, hot bath, sauna can be a part of a warm-up, believe it or not. In fact, bringing back the old rubber suit, you know, I found it at a party, and right. I want to use it for some instructional stuff later, but I have a lot of people that I have to preach to, not necessarily to wear rubber suits, but to wear, warm-ups and sweatsuits, and they'll show up for training, and if we're training outside and it's 55 degrees, they're in shorts and a t-shirt, and I'm like, no, go back and put on your stuff, because your warm-up is delayed and you're going to get hurt.
There we go. And the warm-up, I mean, we think about it when we're watching a boxing match, right? You know, you come out, they're lathered up a little bit, they got a little sweat going on. And I think that it's the whole sweatsuit trash bag sort of warm-up situation. That's interesting, and that perhaps could be another idea for a show.
Yeah.
I'm not going to ask you, I'm not going to have you answer on the record what kind of party you were at that you got the rubber suit. We're going to shift gears, we're going to take it home. What are the big, what are the key takeaways, the big rocks, the wellness pearls, if you had to tie this all together, if someone says, all right, I'm interested, Jay-Z, take it home.
I would say this, first of all, stretching, it's just one of our tools in fitness and in exercise. So we put it in our lifetime body category in the MOSTA or mobility stability, classification. And so that's different than, low intensity aerobic exercise or resistance training, so forth, so on. That's it. Stretching is a tool. Next would be, it's neither good nor bad. It depends on it depends on who needs it and how it's applied. And when we train intelligently, when science meets common sense, that's when we get results. But I just see a lot of folks that, they're flopping around out there because they're doing tons of stretching, and it's not actually either A, helping them get towards their goal, or B, it may actually be causing some negative impacts.
Gotcha. So that's the scenario where you say, this is happening to me, and someone at the party says, hey, this is what you should do. That's the red flag there, because it's just so dependent. We're also different.
Yeah. So the underlying goal, so we've got stretching as a tool. It's not good or bad. The underlying goal is always to normalize movement, or maybe even better way to say that is to optimize movement capacity in regard to your body and your sport and your goals. And so for your body to do the motions that you need to do we've got to get the right amount of mobility and stability in there. And if you do not have the right amount of mobility, then we use stretching. But just because a person either does a certain sport or workout routine or has a certain ache or pain does not always indicate stretching is the most appropriate intervention.
Interesting. A lot of what pearls there, my friend.
Yeah, it's fun to talk about and fun to share with you guys, you know, listeners. Thank you for being a part of this wonderful audience. And as a preview for an upcoming show, we're going to talk about, in another one of these physical therapy basic shows, we're going to explore a question, really, and it's this. Should you work through pain?
Should you work through pain? I cannot wait to chop that up. That could mean so many different things. I don't even know what we're going to get into there. But if that's not a cliffhanger that makes you tune in, audience, next time, I can't help it.
Yeah, and that is indeed sassy sauce. So, hey, what? Thank you so much. Send your questions and comments. You know, we love to engage and welcome those. And if you can, you know, rate and review the show wherever you listen to the show, and like and share and subscribe, so appreciated. And it really helps us to get our message out to more people. And that's really our goal. We're trying to bridge this gap between, you know, a person who just wants to feel good and function and get rid of pain and be every man like PK and I, and then these elite performers and all the science that's available. And so that's where we're sitting. And hopefully you're getting some pearls of wellness and performance wisdom to take with you. And thanks again.
Adios.